Welcome to LifeBeat. I'm your host, Chris Gass, Right to Life of Michigan's Education Coordinator. Joining us today are two people. It's their first time doing a three-person podcast. I listened to a three-person podcast this morning. So, this is going to work, right?
I believe. Right.
Okay, so with us is Emily Kroll, our no longer Education and Events Coordinator, but Events and Outreach Coordinator.
It keeps getting more
completely
confusing.
Completely different, yeah. And Anna Visser, our new Director of Communication and Education. Welcome, Anna.
Thank you.
And you, Emily.
Oh, yeah. Thanks.
Yeah. Okay. all right. So we're going to talk today about a couple topics. We're going to talk about computer programs, automatic death machines. We're going to talk about the Hyde Amendment, but we're going to start off talking about Mississippi, which, by the way, I hate spelling Mississippi. Okay. So in our weekly email, our pro-life update email, which if you aren't subscribed to it, you should go to our website, rtl.org, and you can go to the bottom of any page on the website and sign up for it. We sent out an email basically asking, does Mississippi have the guts? So, of course, Dobbs versus Jackson Women Health is the big abortion Supreme Court case that will determine the fate of Roe versus Wade in the near future, hopefully forever. Getting rid of it, the Supreme Court has to consider what to do. Mississippi, because it's their law, had to ask the Supreme Court to either A, they could have just like limply asked them to let their law go into effect, or B, they could have emphatically asked the Supreme Court to overturn Roe versus Wade. And as author and professor Robert George noted, them asking the Supreme Court to do that will increase the likelihood of them actually addressing that question, should Roe versus Wade be overturned or not. So, the Attorney General of Mississippi, Lynn Fitch, we questioned her courage. She answered it. And they, was it yesterday?
Yesterday, Thursday afternoon,
sent their brief in for the case, and they are asking the United States Supreme Court to get rid of Roe versus Wade. Now it's a done deal, right?
For now. The brief is in. Then the Supreme Court has to go through the arguments and the presentations from both sides. And then they'll take a few months to deliberate and then write their opinions. And then you know how this goes. The Supreme Court takes a very long time. But hopefully we get the result that we want and that the abortion will become a state's issue once again.
It could happen on January 22nd.
It could happen. Wouldn't that be poetic?
It would be. So I think just a couple things to talk about with this story. Kind of one is we're used to some pro-life politicians or judges or elected officials saying they're pro-life, but when it comes to that moment for them to like seize victory, sometimes they will just turn into a quivering mass of jelly and become uncourageous. So even though, you know, you think like Mississippi, oh, it's Mississippi, they're gonna go all in at it, you know. We were wondering, would they do it, or would they kind of, you know, wuss out? They didn't wuss out. So kudos to their Attorney General, Lynn Fitch, who was willing to do that.
Yeah, you go, girl.
And I'm sure she's going to get criticism. I know Mississippi's not the state with the most pro-abortion people in the union.
But now she's going to be attacked by every pro-abortion activist around the country and around the world. So she's got a big target on her back. So let's hope she stays strong and that we get the result that we need from this case.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I looked in our Twitter page, there are these people complaining. And what's their number one complaint? You're like, oh, why aren't you caring about, you know, the pandemic? Or someone came on our Facebook page this morning and was like, why aren't you caring about the Saudi Arabia's boycott of, or embargo of Yemen, you know?
Why would we care?
So my response was, you know, well, those children's lives matter, but how is killing 2,400 unborn children today going to solve this problem? And I said that you are so invested in trying to fix. is this random person on Facebook actually caring about Yemeni children?
It's all smoke and mirrors.
I highly doubt it.
Smoke and mirrors.
I highly doubt it. And poor Anna here, her first couple weeks in, and the first book I handed her was this giant book about Roe versus Wade. How far have you gotten through that?
I think I'm in the first 30 pages. But
it's just a little thick.
It's reminded me of college and all the law classes I had to take. So,
ironically, everyone in college and law class could probably do a better job as Supreme Court judge on the case of abortion than what we have or have had in the past. So this book that I gave her was, it's called Abuse of Discretion by Clark Forsythe. It's basically just an explanation of how the Supreme Court cheated in Roe versus Wade. And they cheated really badly. And that's a feature to kind of go into all the different ways they cheated, but I don't know.
It's a good read.
That book makes me mad.
It's a good read if you have a spare week or two, maybe a month if you want to go through slowly.
It's not that bad.
It's a slow read.
It's a slow read.
It's a slow read.
There's a bit of legalese to get through in some parts of it.
There's a bit. But it's as digestible as that is possible.
It's a very good read.
If you want to take a nap, it's a good pre-nap.
That wouldn't work.
Activity.
No, I could never take a nap and try and read at the same time. It doesn't work for me.
Well, Life Beat is never a pre-nap activity. So.
That's true.
This is an active activity. You know, people listen while they're jogging. Or mowing their lawn.
Good for them. Or driving in the car.
Yep. Or you're on your boat this weekend and beautiful, you know, beautiful Lake City. And you're listening in. And what happened to my pop music on CDY, WCDY? Welcome to this show.
This is better.
This is better. Come on. Seriously. Okay, anything else that we kind of wanted to talk about? I know we've talked about this case a lot, but...
And we'll probably talk about it more in the future.
Absolutely, it's going to have such a big impact. And, you know, the media actually has kind of not been focusing on it quite as much as I thought.
It's still in the early stages. I think once the arguments are presented to the Supreme Court, that's when the media circus is going to begin.
That's when we'll get all the horror stories about all the millions of women that are going to die.
And coat hangers will suddenly come back into existence.
Oh, yeah. So our attorney general. So we did just post on our website some, record on pro-life issues of our three lovely executive branch officers in Michigan, our governor, our secretary of state, and our attorney general, Dana Nessel. And we were showing an ad today in the office, you know, when Dana Nessel was running for Attorney General, where she was holding a coat hanger and kind of like stabbing it in the air, like talking about how
in a back alley.
In a back alley, that's true.
In the back alley.
How she was not going to enforce Michigan abortion law if Roe versus Wade is overturned, because then, you know, if Roe versus Wade is overturned, Michigan's old abortion ban that's been in our state forever, that has always been supported by the people. It's still technically in legal effect. That'll go back into effect. And Dana Nessel says she won't enforce it, and she said it with a coat hanger in her hand, stabbing.
Very violently.
That's happened like 10 times in history, but it's become a symbol.
Very outdated.
Well, and that's the thing, you know. Planned Parenthood has a plan when Roe versus Wade is overturned. They're just going to ship abortion pills through the black market. So, and that's not going to be a back alley thing.
No.
That's going to be a real thing.
Yeah.
You know, that is going to happen, but it's not going to be nearly as much. And honestly, the difference between getting some pills in the mail from a creepy website is no different today than the current rules for the abortion pill, which is spend 5 minutes on the phone at Planned Parenthood and they'll send you some pills in the mail.
Yeah.
What's the difference between that?
There is none.
You know, or no. Like with Kermit Gosnell or various abortion facilities,
gosh.
Like the back alley never went away. These creepy abortionists in dirty facilities are still around today.
Just look at Southwest Women's Options down in New Mexico. This week they sent their 32nd woman to the hospital. They're currently,
this year, right? 32nd?
In the last 10 years.
Oh, last 30, 10 years.
36, 32nd. It's a lot, but they're still under investigation right now for the death of Keisha Atkins. And if you haven't looked up the details, you can look up the details on that case. It was basically, she went in for a late-term abortion. There was a whole lot of mismanagement, bad prescription. It's possible that she was experimented on by the abortionists, and she unfortunately lost her life. So the same abortion facility that is under investigation for the death of a woman has, for the last 12 years, injured either 32 or 36 women and sent them to the hospital.
And didn't her sister also sue them for
her sister
injuring her and experimenting on her?
Yeah.
And you think those cases would get more attention? They never really do.
They don't fit the narrative of legal, safe, and rare.
And wasn't the experiment in her case, they gave her the abortion pill before doing a surgical abortion on her?
Which, by the way, the abortion pill is only approved through the first 10 weeks of pregnancy by the FDA. So giving the abortion pill to someone who is, she was 22 weeks pregnant, I believe, is medical malpractice. According to the rules of the FDA.
But that's not the back alley, Emily.
No. There's a building and everything.
It's totally different. You know, we have a, they pay taxes, so it's different. Okay, so let's move on from Mississippi. I'm glad I didn't have to spell it. M-I-S-S-I-P-P-I.
Don't try.
That's like the first thing you learn now.
I know it is. It is, but it's so annoying. You have to write it out, type it out 10 times in an article. Okay, shifting gears. So we're going to talk about the Hyde Amendment. So for anyone who's not familiar, which, as Anna can attest, even people who are very pro-life, like, I don't want to call your parents out, but your dad out. But, you know, sometimes people aren't aware. Like, most people know that taxpayer funding of abortion doesn't happen. The reason that doesn't happen is because since 1976, every year in the federal budget, there is a provision added to it that basically says none of the money in the federal budget can be used to pay for elective abortions. This has been on the books for almost, well, more than 40 years now. So Joe Biden doesn't like the Hyde, used to like the Hyde Amendment, to be pro-life.
Yeah, all of a sudden he ran for president in 2019 and didn't like the Hyde Amendment anymore.
Right, so Joe Biden introduced the federal budget a couple of weeks ago that did not include the Hyde Amendment. So now the budget has to work through Congress. And was it last week? A committee in the U.S. House voted on that budget, and they did not include the Hyde Amendment.
Or the Weldon Amendment.
Or the Weldon Amendment. So,
which is conscience rights for medical professionals.
Right. So the Weldon Amendment says, you know, if you violate the rights of, you know, pro-life doctors and nurses, then you lose your federal funding. So now it's going to the full U.S. House to consider, now that it's passed through committee, and, you know, we're going to start a campaign next week. I know we've talked about the Hyde Amendment, and we've encouraged people to contact Congress. That was when the idea was being floated. Now we're getting to the point where it's happening. And so, you know, the vote in the House is probably going to be, because there's a pro-abortion majority, there's not a lot that can be done. The real action is going to be in the U.S. Senate once the House is done with voting on it. And in the U.S. Senate, there is a majority of senators who support the Hyde Amendment. However, there's a Democratic majority in the U.S. Senate. And so these, I think it's three Democratic senators who support the Hyde Amendment, and that's enough votes to sink the budget, they have to stand strong and refuse to vote for a budget. In other words, a government shutdown to prevent taxpayer funding of abortion. And I can guarantee you how the media is going to... I said that nicely. We're on the radio. I couldn't say the other way to say it. I couldn't say the bad way, you know. Guarantee you that the media is going to report it as these senators are causing a shutdown. The Republicans are shutting down the government. Even though it's the other side that is the aggressor in this situation trying to change a 40-year-old rule.
Bipartisan rule.
Bipartisan rule. Every budget that Clinton signed, and Clinton tried to get rid of it, there were some exceptions added, like for rape and incest, but for the abortions that deal with just economic or social issues, which is 95%+ of abortions, every budget Clinton signed had the Hyde Amendment, even though he weakened it a little bit. Every budget Obama signed had the Hyde Amendment. So the fight's going to be big. The House, there's not a lot we can do. Nancy Pelosi, yesterday, everyone's favorite Speaker of the House of all time, basically said that, and she always starts off, when she talks about abortion, she's always like, you know, I, as a mother of, what, she said five or six children, I, as a Catholic mother of five children, saying basically the getting rid of the Hyde Amendment was a economic justice issue because poor women need abortions.
I don't understand her thought processes.
Well, she's too busy stocking her ice cream cabinet.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Ice cream for me, but not for thee.
Plenty of Ben and Jerry's ice cream.
Oh, now we're getting
it. Not our topic. Moving on. Nancy Pelosi. So, Nancy Pelosi is one of the richest members of Congress.
True.
Rich enough that her husband owned a football team.
True.
It wasn't in the NFL, but still.
It's a big deal.
If you could say, I own a football team.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money. That's a lot of money. So. I don't even own
a football, so.
What?
That's so sad.
Right. I don't think any of us in here has owned a football team money. Nancy Pelosi does. She does not strike me as the kind of lady who has conversations with poor women very often.
From her gated community, no.
In San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
Where, what's the rent on an apartment? I think it's a studio apartment rent?
It's over $1 million, isn't it?
Oh, to buy, like, a little condo? Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah, outrageous.
You hear about rent and like, wow, that's more than my mortgage, and you're getting a one-room studio apartment with the bathroom is in the main room.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, and so just the idea that she can speak for poor women. And I, of course, find it so interesting because they've done opinion polling on, you know, tax-funded abortion, and routinely about 60 to 66% of Americans say tax-funded abortion's bad, don't do that. So definitely the Hyde Amendment is backed by a supermajority of Americans. When they do polling on it, and do you like the Hyde Amendment, you know, or do you like taxpayer-funding abortions, they break it down by income, and always it's the poorest people who believe the most that abortion should not be paid for with tax dollars.
Yeah.
And it's the richest people always who believe that taxpayer money needs to pay for abortions.
Funny how that works.
So, I mean, Nancy, if you just want to do whatever the poor women want, the poor women say no taxpayer funding abortion.
Yeah, you should
listen
maybe
to the poor. Listen to those poor women.
Yeah, hard to speak for someone if you don't listen to them.
I know. It's frustrating.
Oh, Nancy, that's just. I roll my eyes and say, "Oh, Nancy."
You know, if multimillionaires, and I believe Nancy Pelosi's net worth is somewhere north of $150 million. You know, if you feel so strongly about it, why don't you donate a couple million dollars to pay for abortions, Nancy? You know, someone having trouble making ends meet doesn't have to give their money to someone else to take a human life. I don't know. So this fight will continue, and you're going to keep hearing a lot about it from us in the next month. I think our feature in August will be on the Hyde Amendment, so we'll give you a little bit more background on kind of like the history. We'll talk a little bit more about how Clinton tried to get rid of it. Talk about, you know, attempts like in Obamacare to undermine it. You know, Planned Parenthood gets a ton of money, so money is indirectly being used to pay for abortions. But they are not satisfied with just that. The abortion industry wants it all, even though, you know, Planned Parenthood makes so much money and so much profit that they could pretty much afford to give out abortions for free and still make a profit to any low-income women. They're not going to do that.
Of course not.
No.
It's all about money.
They're a corporation.
It's all about the Benjamins.
Rights Life Michigan doesn't have a CEO.
We also don't get $500 million in tax money every year either.
Oh.
So I think they have...
That's true.
They have that going for them.
Yeah. And we don't get paid a ton.
No.
No.
Yeah.
Maybe Anna does. I don't know. that's why she took this job with these crazy people.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
That's the reason.
So stay tuned, and we'll have more for you on that. Okay. Computer programs, algorithms, automatic death machines. Emily, you have notes.
I do have notes because the title of this technology is so outrageous and complicated, I had to write it down. So essentially in Canada, right now, Canada, we can, they're fighting with New Zealand to be the euthanasia capital of the world. I don't know why they want that title so badly, but it seems that's what they're going for. So researchers and programmers in Canada came out 2 weeks ago with news about a new computer program that they are so proud that they developed. And it is supposed to predict when someone only has 6 months to live. So they call this thing the Risk Evaluation for Support Predictions for Elder Life in Community Tool. They call it RESPECT. So obviously, it's such a good thing because it's respectful. what it actually is doing is they're taking someone's conditions, their medical history, running it through an algorithm and saying, you're going to die at this point in time.
They tested this already on people?
They have been in development of this technology since, I believe, 2007. So this is not a new thing. They've been using medical records going back to 2007. So this is something that they've been actively working on. And on one hand, it might not seem like a big deal. They're saying, oh, it'll give families a chance to prepare, and we're doing this so that people can take time off of work and spend the last remaining days with their family. But this is Canada, which they have been shutting down hospices that refuse to provide euthanasia. And so when you look at the path that their medical community is taking, it's very much, instead of end-of-life care, they want euthanasia. And so you have to look at this from the perspective of, this is a tool that can manipulate people into choosing euthanasia under the belief that they're only going to have 6 months to live. Out of Canada yesterday, they also came out with the news of a timed euthanasia device. Now, we don't know if it's like a capsule that they embed in the skin.
So this is them speculating.
This is them speculating.
But what gets speculated a few years like this turns into truth.
Yes. So the speculation means we're actually actively working on this, and we're trying to put it out there to loosen you up to the idea. So basically, it is, they say, for people who are diagnosed with a terminal illness, and they say, I don't want to live past this point. So they're going to embed this euthanasia device so that if they become mentally impaired to the point where they can no longer choose euthanasia on their own, then the timed device could be activated and it would end their life. Now, that's creepy and weird, and also very, very dangerous, especially when you couple it with this RESPECT computer program where you could really manipulate people into choosing euthanasia when they would otherwise not do so. Canada is a mess. Don't be like Canada. Don't want to even think about Canada.
Canada, not in a patriotic, yes, Canadian sort of way.
Yes. So Canada is a mess. They are pushing euthanasia all the way through. But what it occurred to me when I was looking over this data and these announcements is they're saying now that it would be for people diagnosed with dementia or Alzheimer's or things like that. But you also have to look at it as people with disabilities. So what happens if there's someone with Down syndrome, they're not independent, and their parents are worried about, well, after we're gone, who's going to take care of our child? They can petition to have a euthanasia device implanted in their child so that it would end the child, the person with disabilities' life when their caretakers passed on.
Creepy.
That's crazy.
Have either of you seen the movie Logan's Run, or I believe it's based on a book, Logan's Run?
I've heard of it.
Okay. So the basis of that story is it's a dystopian future, and when everyone turns like 30 or 35, I forget what it is, they have to go like submit themselves to be killed in euthanasia. And if they don't do it, then there's people that go and track them down and kill them, called Sandman.
Yeah, I've heard of it.
And they have, at least in the movie, they have a little device in their hand embedded that shows like how much time they have to live, and it like turns a color when their time is up. That's a dystopian, like, future. And that author, and they didn't even think about, like, this creepy idea of, well, instead of a thing that just says when your time's up, why not put the euthanasia device right in the people?
It's more along the lines, there was a movie called In Time. I believe it's In Time. It had Justin Timberlake in it. Yes, huh. And it was basically...
I like how you remembered that part.
Yeah, I remember that part. But it also had What's-Her-Name in it. She played Cosette in Les Miserables, the movie. So I know...
Anne Hathaway?
Amanda Seyfried.
Yeah.
Yes, see? There we go. I know other names. But basically, the premise of that movie is everyone is born with a set amount of time, and they have the time ticker, and once it hits zero, you automatically die. Oh. So the whole premise of that movie is... trying to get more time. And it's a good movie. I recommend it, but for reasons other than what Anna thinks I recommend it for.
So you can tell we have two women on the podcast.
There it is.
Okay, that's fine. I like Justin Timberlake. He's funny. So one thing that strikes me is when you get these sort of dystopian, like, government-run things that tend to just turn into the culture of death, they always come with these smarmy, saccharine acronyms that just sound so creepy, like respect.
Yeah.
That's like in the UK, where they have, you know, they ration their healthcare. You know, the organization that does it is called NICE, N-I-C-E. And the formula that they've been trying to use to come up with, like, how much time do you have to live? And then, like, make it, like, about your quality of life. They call them qualies. It's like, who could object to that? You know? It's your quality. It's just a quality. Who could, you know, NICE is telling us you can't have this treatment. It's fine. They're nice.
We have to respect
people. We're just respecting people with the respect tool.
The next one is going to be called dignity. I'm predicting there that now.
Now, can you tell that, obviously, they came up with the acronym or acrostic or however you want to call it?
Before.
Yeah, and then came up with this, like, name, like, Risk Evaluation for Support Predictions for Elder Life in the Community Tool.
Doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I don't know what the heck that is.
It's respect. That's what it means.
That's right. Don't question the respect.
It's not the good respect like Aretha Franklin either. It's not fun and poppy, and it's death.
And, you know, the problem, too, with, you know, in theory... this tool wouldn't necessarily be bad.
In theory.
If it wasn't paired with all the other things that they're doing.
But it inevitably always will be. And that's what people don't understand. So these things that come along and people are like, oh, well, that's not objectionable. It's like, okay, but you could very obviously see how this is quickly going to get twisted into a abuse and a tool to grease the skids for the culture of death. So don't do it.
Don't be like Canada.
Don't do it, Canada. Coming soon to a country near you. Yeah. Anything else before we go? I think this, for three people, it went okay.
Yeah?
Yeah,
it went fine.
Didn't talk over each other and...
got a little sarcastic, but I'm
still
here.
Still the, you know, a little less time for each person for an epic rant, but that's okay. No rants today, really.
No rants
today.
We'll
have to take turns.
Okay, yeah. we'll Rochambeau each other for it. You know, who gets to do the rant today?
Or someone will bring a coat hanger shiv. You never know.
Okay, all right. We're a pro-life organization, Emily. Okay, on that note, thank you for listening. Join us next week for our monthly Faith and Life feature with Pastor Paul Clark. It'll be a great interview. Have a wonderful Michigan weekend.